On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reggie Jr. and Suge, I mean, these are all, they are masters at diverting information.
What was the guy's first name? It was Bud Watt?
Yeah, B-U-D-W-A-T-T-S.
And he actually wrote the search warrant based on Hammond's testimony, or debrief, basically.
Yes, yeah.
But no one ever knows what they found in the search warrant.
I never saw what they may have found.
And it was Suge's office that they were searching?
Death Row.
It was Death Row.
Yeah.
And at what point of the case was this? Was this when Kading had it, or this was after Russell?
This is right at the time, or just before Russell left. Because, see, Russell didn't know about it. I surprised him when I found out about it.
That there was this search warrant.
Right.
It continues to amaze me in so many ways as I go back through the FBI files and the LAPD files. How much interesting and surprising pieces of evidence exist and what it means now. I continue to be frustrated by leads that were never pursued or, worse, characters in plain sight who were never interviewed on the record by law enforcement. To the conspirators of the murder, maybe they were also smart enough to realize that this in many ways could be defined as the perfect crime. This happened with police officers inside a police department that could not suffer any more scandals or institutional failure. One telling set of documents from the FBI files is a search warrant that was served in 1999 by the LAPD themselves. The search warrant was on the offices of Death Row Records, Reggie Wright Jr.'s house, and a Chevy Impala that also belonged to Suge Knight.
You are therefore commanded to search for the following property: any handgun, submachine gun, or rifle capable of firing a 9mm bullet, any 9mm ammunition or 9mm expended casings, registration and or paperwork which would tend to show ownership for the 1995 Chevrolet Impala SS, employee records which may tend to identify the co-conspirator in this case known to detectives as Big Sykes, any financial records that may tend to connect the suspect in this case to Big Sykes, Death Row Records, or Marion Hugh Knight.
Another name mentioned that has fallen through the cracks is Devin Sykes. I've heard that name before, but I gotta be honest, I don't know his story. It's a name, according to these documents, that he was a person of interest in the murder of Big. And the speculation is that he also could have been an accomplice in the bank robbery committed by David Mack. Detectives Buford Watts and Fred Miller are serving the search warrant, and the name Fred Miller is important because Miller was Russ Poole's partner and someone who in the early stages of the investigation communicated to Russ to adhere to the political winds inside the LAPD. He basically was telling Russ, just leave well enough alone. The name Mario Hammonds is also within this search warrant, and listeners of the dossier should be familiar with Mario Hammonds, who gave a deposition in the civil trial from inside San Quentin Prison. If you haven't heard it, you should go back, and I think we're also releasing it on Patreon. Mario Hammonds in the search warrant stays consistent in providing information to not only the LAPD, but the FBI. both the FBI and LAPD found him credible enough to use him as they continued the homicide investigation.
Because I was enlisted as an agent provocateur, once the FBI found out that I knew and I started hanging out with Tupac and them, they enlisted me and financed my trips to where I was renting Rolls Royces from Beverly Hills and staying in the nice hotels to go along with the image that they wanted me to have when associating with these people.
And when did you begin assisting the FBI as it relates to death row records?
Anywhere from 93 to 96.
Mr. Hammonds remains an interesting character to me within this whole story, and I often wonder why he decided to get involved in all of this. Was it for money, fame, or the simple fact that he already had a relationship with the FBI and he helped them out on prior cases? He remains a mysterious figure and controversial. In the LAPD documents, the detectives try to redact Mario Hammond's name, but in shoddy police work, they miss redacting it altogether. They wanted to somehow protect Hammonds as a source, and around the time of this search warrant, it would be a few years before the investigators and the lawyers for Biggie's mom would hunt down Hammonds and depose him on the record for their civil suit.
Did the Los Angeles Police Department pay for any of the information you gave them?
No. Only thing they said that they was going to put me in a protection program if this made it to trial. I protected myself.
Have you been offered or have you been paid anything to testify in this deposition today?
No, I have not. Not one red cent, not a dime.
Why are you testifying today?
I'm testifying today because it's the truth and it's something that needs to be done, and I may not be here and I don't want to take this with me because I am a full-fledged Muslim. I pray 5 times a day, and I can't go through life and not right or wrong. In Islam, if you see somebody doing something wrong and you don't try to change it with your mouth, your hand, or your heart, then you become a part of it and you take that to the hereafter with you.
I'm always traveling, always on the road, and the first thing I do whenever I get settled into a new city is I DoorDash items I know I can't live without. And it almost feels like home. Water, alcohol, a charger for my phone, snacks, food from delicious local restaurants, and breakfast in the morning, because you can't cook when you're living in a hotel. DoorDash, your door to more. So download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything from pet food to snacks to neck braces, alcohol, toothpaste, Joy-Con controllers for you gamers out there, pretty much anything. You can get it. You must be 21 plus to order alcohol. And drink responsibly. Alcohol is only available in select markets. DoorDash, go download it. Come on, get it done. Immerse yourself in the fascinating tale of Song of Solomon by the legendary Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Toni Morrison. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that has captivated readers around the world. Follow the protagonist, Milkman Dead, who was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt at flight. For the rest of his life, Milkman, too, will be trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and himself in his Rust Belt hometown, to the place of his family's origins, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and seeresses, liars, and assassins, the inhabitants of a fully realized black world. As the New Yorker put it, Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personality. Whether you're a seasoned reader or new to Toni Morrison, Song of Solomon is a must-read that will ignite your imagination and leave you wanting to read more Morrison. Song of Solomon, a timeless tale that will stay with you long after you've turned its final page. Available now at tonymorrison.com and wherever books are sold. The Dossier is sponsored by BetterHelp. I can't tell you how important it is to set aside some time for you and only you. I gotta be honest. A therapist at BetterHelp made me realize that balancing work, family, friends, and personal growth is a choice. You can make it happen. If you've struggled to make a decision on therapy, why not start today by getting more information on BetterHelp and their therapists? It's entirely online, flexible, and adjust to your schedule. So no excuses, Dossier listeners. So come on, visit betterhelp.com/dossier to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/dossier. Go check them out. Another coincidence, and I'm not sure if there's anything here, within the search warrant was the Chevy Impala that the LAPD wanted to search or do some forensic testing on. The Impala was registered to Shug, but the car's registration lapsed 2 weeks prior to the death of Biggie.
Witnesses described this vehicle as a dark-colored Chevrolet SS Impala. Detectives became aware that Marion Knight had a similar described vehicle registered in his name. It was further noted that Knight's SS Impala vehicle registration had expired on February 22, 1997, just prior to the Wallace homicide.
At this point, I think the information that has been gained on our end is that there never was any forensic testing done on the items from this search warrant or the search warrant of David Mack's house and the various ammunition, guns, and other police gear. In this search warrant, another frequent flyer of the early stages of this investigation and someone who was talking to both the FBI and the LAPD was Kevin Hackey. The work of Chuck Phillips and the power of the LA Times is what discredited Hackey right away, making him look somehow mentally unstable or just plain scared.
Why has Kevin Hackey been discredited so much?
Well, Kevin Hackey, well, let me put it to you this way, discredited by whom?
Yeah.
It's going to be, okay? And then, secondly, I can tell you that Russ Poole found him credible. I interviewed him at length and found him credible. And when you go, if you talk to him, he will. And by the way, he's worth around 30, 40 million now. Okay. He doesn't have to talk to anybody about anything.
One thing I always say about Hackey is that although he was discredited, he became a very wealthy man after selling a Los Angeles-based security company for millions, which would indicate a sane brain and working mind. The most surprising name to appear in this LAPD tranche of documents included in the FBI files is Frank Alexander, the bodyguard of Tupac Shakur, and an employee who worked for Right Way Securities and Reggie Wright Jr. It is noted that Reggie visited Shug in jail 191 times. In less than 2 years. This also was the period of time when the FBI, IRS, LAPD, ATF, maybe DEA, were all closely looking at members of death row records. And for lack of a better word, Reggie and Chug and everyone else associated at that time. The problem for me with this set of documents is that these search warrants were simply window dressing for the LAPD. Grand gestures that were never really followed up on or used to further any investigation. But documents like these, once in the possession of Phil Carson and the FBI, it would give them a roadmap of sorts. So much work was done prior to Phil coming on board to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And also realize this search warrant was 2 years after the murder of Big. It's an awful lot of time to wait around to serve any type of warrant. 2 years when it should have been done weeks after the homicide. It was this type of LAPD mishandling that is in plain sight that again proves they didn't care. They didn't want to solve this crime.
In the context of the interviews conducted of you by the Los Angeles Police Department, did they make any statements to you regarding their beliefs as it relates to the Christopher Wallace case?
They said that they knew it was cops involved because cops worked with Suge, and whenever I was in LA, the cops protected us, and that the LAPD was involved. And Suge said that that is the reason why this murder would never be solved. He told me this out of his own mouth, that because LAPD was involved, that this murder would never be solved, and that if anybody says anything against me, I can find out. That's why I don't know how you guys find out about this. They told me that this shit was going to be sealed, that nobody would know. And 10 years later, everybody pops up.
As we venture into 2024, the internet conspiracy machine of lies and false information is constantly fed with the advent of more and more videos on YouTube, Instagram. It's a circus wherein the only thing that really matters is a quick, controversial soundbite. The truth, I'm starting to feel, is forever lost or buried at this point. I did something the other day. If you go to YouTube and search the murder of the notorious B.I.G., what comes up pretty quickly is videos on Pucci Faust. Not David Mack, not Rafael Perez. Videos of Greg Kading. The war on misinformation has been won. And as content becomes more of a he said, she said business, what is there to really do? Not one investigator with any credibility has ever looked at Pucci Faust as a suspect. Yet his picture and stories about him come up in the top 10 videos of YouTube for any young kid to see and hear. Journalism is dead. Reporting is dead. Evidence is probably dead. Gossip and tit for tat back and forth reigns. As more research happens, as more people feed me information and research, even someone like myself, I can't keep up with the latest lies or bullshit. Who's saying this or that? It's endless. So as we start to fully unpack the FBI documents, the only thing left to do is state the obvious and feed that machine with honesty and proof. But maybe, just maybe, this was the perfect crime. And as we head into the 27th year, everyone involved in it just might get away with it. Dossier listeners, thank you for listening to season 2 of The Dossier. After 70 episodes, I need to go back to investigating, reporting, and finding new interview subjects and information. What I always want to do here at The Dossier is always be finding new interview subjects and people that have never talked before, which does take considerable time and energy, but have no fear. Please go to patreon.com/dossier and sign up. Even if you get a free account, go sign up there, as in the coming weeks, we will be releasing audio, video, and updates for the next batch of Dossier episodes. And here's another thing. If you've enjoyed listening to the stories confined in the Dossier feed, starting next week, I'm dropping a limited series called Hip Hop vs. the Cops. This audio documentary tells a story that took place in the early 2000s about a secret task force of detectives that worked out of the NYPD that had hip hop's biggest stars under surveillance. It was in coordination with the FBI and the United States Attorney in Manhattan. And oh, by the way, I was leaked a 500-page bound surveillance dossier. Guess what? At the time, in the press, They called it the Secret Hip Hop Dossier. So stay tuned. Every week on the feed and at patreon.com/dossier for more content and shows. I will be back with more episodes of the ongoing cover-up by the LAPD in the murder of Biggie, and also coverage of the murder trial in Las Vegas of Tupac Shakur. But before you go, please listen to the trailer of Hip Hop versus the Cops wherever you listen to podcasts.
There is a such thing as hip hop police. They running around taping and targeting people, but they ain't got no murders on tape.
Hip hop cops. I think them niggas always been there. You know what I mean? Ain't nothing new.
They looking at us like we're crime bosses, like we ordering hits, mafia hits, and like that.
It wasn't so long ago that racial profiling was uncovered as an act that was being conducted by police.
We're not paying attention to what's going on in the South Bronx or in Brooklyn. We're following Fabulous around Midtown Manhattan. That's a waste of our tax dollars.
And whenever they say we gotta jump and ask how high and strip butt-ass naked in the middle of the street and get arrested and harassed and manhandled in front of all these people to see.
Why would the government make a unit for rappers?
You find out their lifestyle, you find out where they go, when they sleep, when they're up, who they party with.
I have bigger problems than just the hip hop police. My name's Irv Gotti, boss of Murder INC.
The standard is so low now that they can surveil anybody they want to and justify it. And then later on say, oh, I'm sorry.
There's all these assumptions that a lot of people in the hip hop game came from the drug game, and they did. A lot of people came from the streets. This was a way out for a lot of people.
What the music game do, and it gives you an avenue to change. So as we're changing, like, don't try to pull us back.